Hello, I'm Amanda McNulty with Clemson Extension and Making It Grow, and this is a Making It Grow Extra. That's what we call our podcast. And today I'm speaking with Dave Lemieux, who's part of Clemson's agribusiness team. And something that's real interesting right now that people are excited about is Southern Heritage Foods. And y'all have an interest in that because apparently it's a niche market that might help some new farmers or help existing farmers find a way to have a value-added product. I mean, maybe something that can be a little more remunerative for them, that can help them. A better price sometimes with something that's got a story behind it. What really is the story behind these Southern Heritage Foods?
Well, it's a story that goes back quite a ways. They're foods that we had on the table a century ago, 50 years ago, perhaps some of them, and less and less on the tables of folks in the South today. But there seems to be a resurgence of interest in these food products and these crops that are behind developing those food products. And there are several people working on initiatives related to this. So Southern Heritage Foods are things that if you went to an old historical cookbook, you might find recipes and therefore produced for making certain things. And you may not be able to easily, at least, find the ingredients today to make those very same recipes because they're not being produced in very large quantities, and they may not be made commercially available.
It might talk about a certain kind of pea or a certain variety of okra or just all sorts of things that used to be in common parlance and everybody was growing them in their gardens. But we switched all that, I guess, when we started shipping food back and forth. How did we get away from those local foods? And we kind of lost them for a while. How did that happen, Dave?
Well, I think, you know, the consumer sometimes is a they change in terms of, you know, what are they interested in. And a lot of times what's in vogue today is not in vogue tomorrow. So I think there's some vagaries there in the consumer mind and kind of what's been important to them. And mass media advertising perhaps is probably has a role to play. Definitely the opportunities to acquire foods from greater distances that really began to occur basically after World War II when we began to figure out refrigeration and long-haul shipping and that sort of thing so that we could have products that were even out of season coming in from distant places where they were grown. For us, I think in this part of the country, California was probably the Central Valley, Joaquin Valley, those places that were shipping food products into our markets here, and they were popular and they were in vogue. Bananas from South America that became, you know, came online and began to dominate for a period of time is another story that's out there. All those kind of, you know, technological innovations that created these long supply chains and sustained them and probably encouraged consumers to think that they could have basically whatever they wanted any time of the year, maybe crowded out the plate a bit from some of these things that were previously really, you know, staple products on the plate. There's that, and then I think also perhaps some of these crops were a challenge to grow in large quantities because of disease pressures, pest pressures, and that sort of thing. So that probably was an influence.
What do you think drove the interest into people wanting to have these foods again and often their willingness to pay a premium price for them?
I think, and maybe I can borrow some information from another area that I kind of do some work in, the agritourism. It's slightly related to this through kind of culinary tourism and people, you know, with the urbanization of our society, people being removed from the farm maybe by a generation or two, and definitely geographically, not having that kind of face-to-face direct contact with the farmer and with the countryside. People after a while looking for some authentic experiences, harkening back to earlier days, that sort of thing. I think a mass media, again, has been playing a role in the last decade or so with the advent of all the food-related television that's brought that to the fore. So there's been opportunities to kind of go back and dig back and find these unique products that people have kind of forgotten about, looking for an authentic experience, looking to have something that reaches somewhere deep inside them, perhaps, and to put it on the plate and to make that part of what they do on a more regular basis.
And we have such an interest in cooking in the South now, and we're looking for these traditional things, but we're fixing them up in ways that really glorify them too. I mean, it's not just a plate of, you know, beans and rice anymore. I mean, because we've taken all the expanded knowledge and the expanded access to things that are different, and we're kind of tweaking some of these traditional meals, I think, don't you?
Yeah, I think so, and probably actually producing them in a more healthful way these days too. Back in the old days, before we had the machinery and the cars and everything that we have, we actually went out and it would be okay to eat some of these products that we had back then, cooked in the old traditional ways, because we'd go work it off. But these days, we don't do that as often.
No, we don't.
We're much more sedentary, so we have to pay more attention to what we put in with them.
Well, I think we're fortunate in South Carolina because we've got some people who are national leaders in this.
That's right. We've got people who I would call luminaries in this, people like Glenn Roberts and David Shields and Stephen Kresovich, who's working with Clemson on...
We'll talk a little bit about each one of those. Tell us a little bit about Glenn first.
Well, Glenn, working with Carolina Gold Rice and helping to bring that and other grains that really have been kind of forgotten about. There's a rye they're growing out there right now that's was highly prized by distillers, and it's kind of coming back into production, perhaps starting small and kind of getting a footing for now.
And his business, Anson Mills, ships all over the country. His products are in tremendous demand by chefs.
That's right. I mean, you'll find his products in New York City.
That's pretty exciting.
On the table there. So.
And then, of course, David Shields, who's just a historian and has done so much research and come up with such wonderful stories. And even one fruit that he thought was extinct turned out not to be extinct.
Right. And it amazes me, if you follow his Facebook page like I do, all of the things that he's uncovering. I can't imagine how he finds the time to actually do all that he does. And this is not actually his, this is the byline for him as an historian. He actually is more of a specialist in some other areas. I believe it's dealing with theater and film.
Well, he certainly has found the theatrical part of these foods, and the stories that he tells with them just makes it remarkable to hear him talk. And then Dr. Kresovich, who's a geneticist, I believe.
That's right. That's right. And one of the things that I think a comment that came from him that made me kind of think about this a little bit more is that, you know, if part of the reason we're not growing these products anymore is because of the disease and pest pressures, perhaps there's a way through genetic modification to maintain the true integrity of those crops, the flavor, the nutritional aspects, and that sort of thing, but to change the profile of that plant such that it's more resistant to these pests so that it's easier to grow in higher volumes.
Or that it yields more consistently at one time, which makes it easier to harvest and send to market. And, of course, that brings in Brian Ward, who's down at our Coastal Research Center, who has been so important in this movement because he has found ways to select those traditional Southern heritage foods and find the ones that have the best profile for farmers to grow, and has also come up with a new way of using an organic fertilizer that's going to help production meet the need that you have to have, as you say, from the economic standpoint, because you've got to stay in business.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely important to have someone like Brian involved, because, you know, the backyard gardener who's doing this kind of thing will not pay attention to the details and embed this into, like, ongoing research in the way that he is down there to really give it the serious look that I think it deserves.
I'm excited to learn more about this, and I thank you because I know your program has offers workshops and things specifically with this title sometimes. So keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.